Welcome to the latest episode of Your Wealth with Gemma Dell, a podcast series designed to help you create, grow, and protect your wealth.
Hi, and welcome to Your Wealth. I'm Gemma Dell, NAB Trades Director of SMSF and Investor Behaviour. In our last podcast, we spoke to Scott Phillips of The Motley Fool about the first half of the waxes, so the insanely popular tech stocks in Australia that have finally garnered their own acronym. We're so excited about that. And we know how popular this was. Everyone is very enthusiastic to hear part two. Scott, thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you, Gemma. Good to be back with you.
So let's talk about Appen. Mm-hmm. This one, just the words that describe mm-hmm. it tend to throw most people. So let's talk about machine learning and artificial intelligence.
How good is that? That's worth a couple of boxes right there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. Nothing else. You should definitely pay for that. Exactly. There is an ETF about artificial intelligence that people are happy to pay huge amounts of money for. What I love about this, founded by a linguist.
Yes,
Female founder and a linguist.
How cool is that?
So it tells you a little bit about what they're trying to do, simply that fact. Explain the rest of it and the bit where they're not going to start a war.
Right. So I can't promise you the war thing, but I'll explain the rest of it. There we go. So in terms of machine learning and AI, there are some things computers can do for themselves. Most of the AI, most of the machine learning has to be trained by somebody or something. And in Appen's case, it's voice recognition in particular, and phrase recognition, accent recognition, and so many languages and dialects around the world that we used to, remember the old days, you ring up and you talk to a Telstra thing and they say, first it was press six for this, and it was say what you want. You say customer service. Did you say new phone? No, I said customer service. Did you say billing inquiry? No, customer service. The voice recognition was terrible, outright terrible. Kind of cool, but outright terrible. These days, if you pick up a Siri or an OK Google or an Alexa in one of those companies, you can tell it what you want. And I've actually, my phone just, there you go. My phone, I said, OK, Google, it's opened up and ready for me to give it something. The very idea, you can actually see, I don't know with the other ones, I've got a Google phone. As you talk to it, you see the words actually changing depending on the context of the following words. So I might say a sentence, and three words in, it might think I'm saying something. By the time I say the fifth or sixth word, it's realized that what I actually said was something different based on what followed, which is kind of cool, right? So it's actually learning on the way through. The context is king, and it's helping it recognize what I'm saying. It's got the broad sounds, but it's putting those sounds in context and then working out what I'm trying to infer or trying to imply. That's where Appen comes in. So its ability to effectively help computers train themselves to recognize language, questions, comments, dialects, accents, all that kind of stuff. Think about, so English is simple, right? But then you've got accented English. So think about English being spoken from someone who's from India or New Zealand or Taiwan or from the UK, right? All English, all the same words, very, very different accents. Now multiply that by the number of accents and languages around the world, the number of different words, speaking of technical words, that starts to get really, really big. So think about the word Altium, right? Now we know it's a company name, we all know that. Altium, a machine's probably getting aluminium, maybe, or something else, right? So what am I actually trying to say? Well, over time, you train it with enough words, enough times, it starts to realize what you're trying to say. And again, the machine learning bit, when I say, what is the Altium share price? Well, it doesn't want the aluminium share price, it must be an Altium, okay, so I'll put that in. And that's where it starts to help the machine learn context, words, orders, all that kind of stuff. A great example I've heard used is to ship a book, or to book a ship, right? What does the word book mean? Well, it means either to organize a trip, or it means a physical book that you're turning your page of. What does ship mean? A ship means to send or a vessel. So book a ship, ship a book.
Yeah.
Three words, same words, different order, different connotation, different meaning. So those things are, machines can't get them yet in and of themselves. Appen has done a wonderful job partnering with some of the biggest companies. Microsoft's probably the biggest it's partnered with directly. It never acknowledges, by the way, which companies they are. It's bound by confidentiality not to tell, but there's enough clues in the public markets that we know effectively, or we can reasonably guess who they are.
I'd like to say eight of the top 10.
Yes, exactly. They're very, you don't have to worry about who they are.
We'll just give you some numbers, right. Exactly. And you can work out which are the two that we don't have.
Make your own assumptions, exactly. So, and if you think about Apple and Google, are most likely the ones they don't have, by the way, so the other eight are pretty easy. As you think about that market and the requirement for that sort of training, really, really important. The other thing it has done historically is things like with the Bing search engine. If you search World Cup, now, when you search World Cup 2 years ago, you were probably looking for the Women's Cricket World Cup. And a year ago, you were probably looking for the Soccer World Cup, and 6 months ago, the Rugby Union World Cup, and then now you're probably looking for the Water Polo World Cup or whatever else it is. Now, World Cup is World Cup is World Cup, but the relevance of the search results, again, something computers can't do, right? It knows that the prevalence of the world's World Cup. It'll find the website has most of those in it, but those won't change in relevance terms until you actually tell it, oh, by the way, this is the relevance that you should be delivering. Now, Google does this, because Google's such a, got a massive, massive search traffic, it knows which links you click on and which way you spend your time and how long you are on those particular links. So Google very quickly realized that we moved from one World Cup to the other because you're no longer clicking on the Women's World Cup, you're now clicking on the Cricket World Cup or whatever it is. And you start to make that change, Google realizes that something's changed. For the smaller search engines or the ones that don't have that sheer amount of effectively network effect type traffic, you need some extra help to learn that quickly so it's not giving you terrible results for 2 weeks before it finally realizes that you've got something else in mind.
Mm.
And so those are the two broadest categories of work that Appen is doing for its customers. Has been incredibly successful. The customers love it. They're using more and more of it. So it's getting growth in customers, but also growth in business per customer because it's so valuable for those businesses, right? We know that the war for the living room, the Alexa, the Siri, the OK Google, that remains one of the key battlegrounds now for tech companies. And to do that really, really well, you need that sort of input, that sort of insight from companies like Appen, who can help you train your computers to know exactly what you're looking for when you're looking for it and what's most relevant to the particular search or conversational context that you're looking to use. So that's the Appen story. Mark Bryan, the current CEO, really good CEO, good guy. We followed him for a couple of years at a previous company. So they're doing a lot of things right now and just making every post a winner.
Okay, so it sounds like you rather like this one too. You've actually said really positive things about each of the companies, which surprises me, because you put out a tweet yesterday saying...
I did.
Goodness me, everyone's paying a lot for this stuff. Yes,
and I wouldn't, and I wouldn't pay for Appen at the current price.
Okay, so this is where it gets interesting.
And this is where we separate the business from the price, right? So Appen is doing... If you said to somebody, design a business to make money out of AI, Appen is a great solution for that problem, right? And at a share price, which is probably a fraction of today's share price, it's great value, or at least decent value. Here's my concern with Appen is humans are currently training machines because they need the training. You either believe that for the next 50 years, machines will continue to need to be trained by humans, or you believe that the advance of AI itself and training itself and context itself will help the computers train themselves. And so at some point, the argument goes, and I tend to be in this camp, that if you believe in the march of progress, to imagine that in, let's call it 20 years, just to be really out there, right? To imagine in 20 years' time, computers can't do this for themselves, to my mind, actually kind of, you have to stand in the way of the otherwise unstoppable march of progress. To believe computers will get to that point and say, we can go no further, we're always going to need humans to help us, I think that's a really aggressive, ambitious belief, right? To believe that they can't possibly get there is tough. You think about the march of, iPhones are 11 years old. So 11 years ago, we had no iPhones. These days, they have every feature they've got now in less than just over a decade. If you believe that computers will finally get to a point where either from recorded speech, from all of the language that they're picking up with our microphones when we're using them already, by the way, and that's giving them context, if you believe that eventually will start to mean computers can train themselves rather than any of that human input, or the input like a Google search where they simply look at the links you click and work out for themselves what context is, I have a concern that Appen has a relatively fixed life in its current form. Because at some point you simply don't need as many people with as many engagements with the company or the companies, its customer companies, to actually train it that well. Mm. And so if you believe that it can take over its own training to some degree or other, to believe it continue to grow at the same rate, let alone hold its current level, that's a really aggressive, ambitious view in my mind. I think computers will get there, and when they do, Appen will find its market shrinking reasonably quickly, if not even faster. So at that point, I think Appen has to either pivot meaningfully to something else, and we don't know what that might be, or simply choose to be worth a lot less. Now, will it ever have zero customers? Probably not. There's probably always going to be small websites who, for some reason or other, want to use Appen's business. But to imagine Google or Amazon or Apple won't sell that kind of context data at some point, it's probably also hard to believe. So I just think, you know, I don't know where the future is, but the march of progress is so fast and so thorough, I just find it hard to believe that it won't continue along. And so, again, on a risk assessment basis, if you believe that at some point its market might be half, a third, a quarter, a tenth of the size it is now because simply the computers start to do it themselves, you're going to be paying hypergrowth multiples for a business that might actually be smaller in relatively short order. It might be years, it might be a decade or more, I don't know. But again, given that risk, given the fundamental risk there, if you're betting, if you're rolling a dice, knowing that if you throw a one, you lose money, how many times you roll the dice before you say, well, it's a bit too rich for my blood? And I think right now, for my mind, Appen is just too hard to believe you can get ongoing market-beating returns from an already very inflated price. I think that's a reasonably aggressive assumption. So in that circumstance, I hope the company does well. I'd love to be proven wrong, just on a personal basis, from a company perspective. I'd love to see them be successful for years to come. Mm. I just think the risks are way too high at the current price to buy the shares.
very valuable perspective. The joke that I made about starting a war came from Elon Musk, where they asked, they asked him.
That's right.
You know, you've raised some concerns about machine learning and AI. You know, seriously, how bad could it get? And he said, well, they could start a war, which is fairly dramatic and enough to freak people out pretty much.
That would be a worry.
Do you think there's privacy and regulatory risk with that component of the market as well? That would be one of the things I'd be concerned about.
I think so, although I don't think Appen necessarily has that risk themselves.
Right,
They will always
for the
be
users.
And for the companies that actually are providing those services themselves, the customers it's helping train. So if Google or Amazon or Apple have those privacy issues at some point, they'll have to be dealt with. But unless voice recognition goes away, then we'll always need someone to train those. Until the machines do it themselves, we'll need someone to train those machines. How Google and Apple and Amazon and others are allowed to use that data, different thing. I can't imagine them all of a sudden saying, no, we don't want to do that anymore. This thing is a data. I think voice recognition becomes a very, very long-term win. I think the business that it's in, I think, is spectacular. I think we will have a point in time where we don't have much in the way of input devices. We might be using our hands and our voices. Will we use keyboards as much in 5 years' time, 10 years' time? I doubt it, quite frankly. I'm a futurist, by the way, so I could be horribly wrong on that. But I think it's very unlikely that we are continuing to use the same input, the mouse, keyboard devices in 5 years, 10 years to the same degree. We are still going to use them, of course, because sometimes it's just easier. Hmm. But you think about the way voice recognition is going today, it makes more sense to me that we will use less of that. So that's good for voice recognition in general. I think the privacy is probably at the end customer level, not Appen's level itself.
Okay, so that's a really good point for people. We'll get to zero now. Okay. So this one many small business owners are familiar with, right? It's a real live product like Afterpay that people have an experience of. Now, the story's been told many times at NAB, much like the story of Afterpay, because I have this understanding that NAB supported them both in their infancy. With Xero, I think we had some key executives on the board and all sorts of stuff.
Okay.
And in New Zealand, I'm probably getting this story completely wrong, I should check it, but anyway. there's a lot of internal videos about them, let me put it that way.
There you go, that's a good sign.
Yeah, but NAB is a business bank, and so we spend a lot of time supporting businesses in their infancy, and we do like to celebrate the successes. It's always nice to see them to come through. So tell us about Xero.
So as you say, Xero did a really fantastic job of combining a couple of things together. They took advantage of, software as a service, the SaaS kind of acronym that we know now. It really kind of, in the public imagination, Xero was the poster child for SaaS, right? It was the first time we all kind of went, oh, I get the subscription model, the whole idea of subscription, pay by the month, get something online. It was a great design product at almost exactly the right time. I'm old enough to have used some of those kind of, what we used to call thin client computing, where you'd type on your keyboard and the keystrokes would go to a remote computer and then come back to you and be displayed on your screen. We used to do that all the time now, right? When you use Google Docs, that's exactly what you're doing. Your computer is an input terminal. It goes to the Google server, you see the words, it all makes sense. Way back in the day, that was horribly, horribly clunky and just awful experience. I had an employer who tried to make me use Excel doing it that way, and it was just a nightmare. Anyway, long story. Once both the technology and the internet speeds improved sufficiently, when that became possible, and this is the story of tech, right, is great ideas need the right environment to succeed. You could have imagined 15 years ago the idea of Xero as a concept, you could never have implemented it. There simply wasn't the tech in terms of the design or programming tech, but also the computer speeds. Another story I remember, the very first computer touchscreen I used was literally infrared beams being shot between both diagonally and horizontally across the front of a computer, where you literally break the beam with your finger. That's how the end quotes touchscreen would work. It actually wasn't a touchscreen at all. I had a mate whose dad was a mining engineer, he bought it home. And you literally break the beam with your finger, and that's how it would know where your finger was, right? The horizontal and vertical kind of cross-axis. Build the old battleship, A3, B4, that kind of stuff. But when tech improved sufficiently that all of a sudden the touchscreen device became real, then you get the iPhone. It doesn't exist without touchscreen, right? It just simply can't exist. So the same idea with Xero, that the programming was possible, the internet speeds were sufficient, but all of a sudden you could create something that people could use that was simple and easy to use. That conveyed a whole lot of advantages. Two key ones were, you didn't have to shell out for a piece of software. You'd have to shell out for a piece of software first. Secondly, you'd have to install the software. And so you could all of a sudden, there was no sense of updating this version of the software, that version of the software, which was always super painful, right?
So young people listening to this will have no idea what we're talking about. And I'm laughing because I remember getting CDs.
Yes.
It was CD-ROMs, I guess, in the post.
I can do you one better than that.
Yeah.
I used 11 3.5-inch floppy disks
to
install Microsoft Office way back in the day.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I remember when our floppy disk drives got disabled because we didn't need them anymore.
Yes.
We were so advanced. And I was using financial planning software, and we would get them on a CD. And if you... And we knew many of the financial planners who were using this software were not updating regularly.
Right.
And it was a huge problem because they weren't getting their tax rates correct, and there were, you know, superannuation thresholds and stuff would change and it wouldn't be updated. So there was a lot of risk in people having their software up to date. So this idea that you can just log in.
Right.
You know, so if you're a young person, you don't know how lucky you are.
So, and you used to buy a version of Windows the same way, right? Now even Windows is effectively paid by the year. You just pay to have continued access to it. So we're paying for access now, not for physical goods. And we all know that with Netflix and other things. You pay for access to Netflix, you don't go and rent a DVD or buy yourself a VHS tape back for the kids listening. The only thing is called VHS, ask your parents. The idea of that approach is, it was the company that really brought that to the public consciousness in a really, really big way, right? And so that change, Rod Drury and the team at Xero did a fantastic job of designing software that all of a sudden, for a whole lot of reasons, was much, much better. Now, what they did really well, they got the accountants on board who deal with the small business people. So it wasn't just saying to the local carpenter, hey, mate, using a shoebox, come and use Xero, it's great. What they actually said was to his accountant, when he comes in, tell him you can use Xero, you can do it online, you can control it, he can see what's going on. Again, the seamlessness we talk about with WiseTech, same kind of idea at a really micro scale of the professional and the client. You'll use the same software, always up to date, always current. As you say, latest tax rates and all that kind of stuff is wonderful. That really changed, and all the data entry is done, right? So this is the other thing, is you don't have the shoebox of receipts. You pay the accountant a fortune to go and type the things in, put them in. You do it as you go. And in the old days, you could have a desktop piece of software that did it for you, an MYOB or a QuickBooks or something. You do it yourself. You might somehow email or download the file and give it to your accountant, something else. Once you take all that friction out of the way, and again, friction is a key component of all these whack stocks. When you take that out of the way, people are like, well, why wouldn't you use it? The other thing they did really well is they convinced a whole lot of small business people that now they could. So the shoebox example was a real one. And so the growth of the market from Xero, yes, they stole some share from their competitors. What they did really well was convince everybody they could use something like this. So every small business person now can, don't all do, but all they all can, simply use Xero or one of its competitors now, but to do exactly that for themselves, really simply, easily, cost effectively, really low price, like super low price. The other benefit of distributed software is you can make the price a whole lot lower. You're not making the boxes, you're not paying a retailer to want to sell it. All those component parts of, you know, the physical goods, the retail relationship, that all goes away. And you simply are sending it straight, you're not even sending it, you're literally, they're logging onto your software. They don't even own the software, they own access to the software. And that's a really, really important difference that, again, we kind of take for granted now because it was five or 6 years ago and we're used to it. At the time, that was a huge, huge breakthrough. So super easy to use, all distributed, always the current version, pretty cheap. That was a winning deal. And that accountant kind of referral program was the real strategic masterstroke. That's what enabled the rest of it to come to fruition in a really, really big way.
Okay, so what do you think of the price then?
I think Xero's probably the most traditionally, I was going to say attractively priced. I don't think I can get quite there. In terms of relative valuation metrics, traditional valuation metrics, it's probably the cheapest on those traditional metrics right now. Still not super profitable, but you can see the... You can see the level of profit that it would be delivering were it not spending a fortune on marketing and product development. So you can, at a reasonable level, they're much more transparent than they used to be with their P&L. You can now see how much money they could be making if they chose to do things a little bit differently. In other words, go from growth to effectively a harvest type mode. A bit like Amazon, right? You could always see what Amazon could deliver in time. It was never apparent they necessarily definitely would. There was always risk, but you could see how Amazon's growth was going to eventually deliver some meaningful profit. At Xero, it's kind of in that same basket. So while it's not traditionally cheap from, you know, it's not earning a fortune in bottom line earnings, it doesn't take too many adjustments to look at the numbers and say, this is steady state, and this is how much money they would be making if they were able to achieve that. So that's a really, really attractive way to do it. If you start to make those adjustments, you don't have to assume hyper growth to see where the profit might come from, even at the current level of revenue, let alone the growth revenue they might be able to deliver. So Xero, it's also probably, I think, the lowest... Yeah, probably the lowest growth potential of the five of them, at least traditionally, because it's tried to do the expansion, it hasn't quite worked. And so maybe it has a second go in the US, maybe it's a slow burn US growth. It's super dominant in New Zealand, it's pretty dominant here, it's pretty well dominant in the UK as well. Those markets are both mature as markets, and Xero's growth in those is getting towards some sort of maturity level. So you've now got to start to say, this is an older business, it doesn't have as much blue sky as the others. But also, I think from a business perspective, you can see how quickly it gets to profitability, how it stays at that level of profitability for a meaningful amount of time. So that's where the lowest risk of the lot, simply because it's been through that process. there's not as much blue sky in the price, but nor is there as much blue sky potential. So if you risk adjust that backwards to some degree, you get back to probably the most traditionally, again, it's all relative, right, compared to the other WACC stocks, the most traditionally able to be valued model, given those couple of adjustments you can make to the bottom line, see what the real profitability of its current business looks like.
Right, so you've probably answered the question I'm going to ask now throughout each of these. Brilliant overview, thank you, of each of the companies so people can understand what they are, what they do, who their customers are, what the growth potential looks like. I think that example of AI and the potential contraction over time is really interesting. Don't always look that far ahead. It's, just look to the future and think, isn't this beautiful?
Right.
Without thinking at some point.
So this could stop, exactly.
Yeah. It might just end. Yeah. Summarise your tweet for me. It's a tweet. You probably don't have to summarise it. You can probably just say it.
I'll see if I can read it out for you.
So this was, so it's Friday today. What's the date?
It is the 3rd of May.
Mm-hmm. So we'll publish shortly. People will not be waiting a long time for this. So there's not going to be, hopefully, anything dramatic that happens between the day of recording
and when we publish. All right. So basically, here's the tweet. I said, for the avoidance of uncertainty and for posterity, whether I'm right or wrong, I think Australian tech is officially at completely silly valuations. I don't know how long it continues. I don't know if or when I'll be right. But these prices are in total crazy.
It's
pretty unequivocal.
Yeah, so after this beautiful explanation of each of the companies, a fairly glowing report on each of them in terms of what their business does and the value they're delivering, at least to their customers, which is really important because we have plenty of businesses in the market that are not delivering great value to their customers and so on. So high quality businesses generally, not necessarily great investments. In fact, silly valuations.
Now, to be fair, I wasn't just talking about WACC stocks, I was talking about tech overall. And I think, frankly, some outside WACCs are probably less well valued or even more crazily overvalued than some of the WACC stocks because I think to some degree, FANG has dragged WACCs with it and WACCs has dragged a whole lot of other stuff with it that probably doesn't deserve to. And so, to the extent that Australian investors are chasing this kind of, and some investors are chasing this whole idea of all of a sudden this is some new world, right? I'm old enough to remember 99, 2000. And
this time
that
different.
Was a well that was the thing right and so the Warren Buffett's lost it headlines came out and Buffett underperformed the market for a couple of years and maybe he's over it, maybe he's past it, he's a dinosaur, he doesn't really understand tech, he doesn't know what, you know, probably best in the 50s and 60s Buffett's over it. Of course now we go fast forward, easy to say in hindsight now, fast forward 20 years and say actually it turns out at the time there were some stupid valuations. Now the Amazons and the eBays of the world have emerged from those, I wouldn't even say unscathed, but emerged from those to much much higher valuations. Whole lot of those companies went stone motherless broke, and I don't know if the NASDAQ's back to the same levels. If it is, it's only just kind of 20 years later, right? So that's the sort of havoc that can be wreaked by the this time it's different approach. The old quote, I think it's John Templeton, the four most dangerous words in investing are this time it's different. And so when you start to think, yeah, it's different because I have to say, again, back me around, I hear those words, and I'm back to 99 where people say, oh, it's different because it's all about eyeballs now. It's all about the internet, you know, it's all those things. They were enabling technologies, but they weren't businesses in and of themselves. Now, the current crop are better off than those, really clearly. So to your point, they have customers, they're doing good things, they're delivering value. That puts them well ahead of, frankly, most of the dot-com kind of crash, dot-bust stuff, a dot-bomb. They're better off. I don't want to draw a direct parallel between the two. But what I do think is when you're paying 160 times earnings for one company or 28, 30, 40 times revenue for others, you are expecting a whole lot to happen just to be made whole, as I said. To if you work that backwards, traditional valuations, these no company can grow to the sky, right? Amazon's got its place. Maybe Afterpay is 10 times the size at some point, maybe it's 20 times the size at some point in sales terms. Can it really still deliver enough profit and profit growth to justify the current level of market cap, $6.6 billion valuation? Amex is something like 15 times the size of Afterpay by market cap. Yet Amazon is a globally dominant provider in credit cards, in wallets of most Americans and probably a decent minority of people around the rest of the world. That's 15 times feels like a lot of upside for Afterpay, right? But that's if you are as successful as Amex. Mm. And to get there, a lot has to go right. You've got to press a heap of volume of transactions, all the stuff that goes with it. So if you start to break that up and say, you know, are these prices really attractive compared to that? I just don't see that they're obviously true. Now, in some version of some future parallel universe, these companies are all going to be fantastically successful, and I look silly, right? And I'm completely okay with that because I'm not saying they will necessarily go bad. They're not shorting them. I'm just saying right now, a lot has to, everything has to go right. You know, the risks are, none of the risks are factored in, all the upside effectively is already factored in. So from this point forward, if you're already factoring all the upside, where does the share price growth come from? Where's the fundamental upside for share prices from here? I can't see it. I don't know how you deliver that from this point. Even if they are successful, so much, as I said, is brought forward. The Amazon example of, you know, the shares are worth $2,000 today. If they sold for $2,000 in 1994, then the growth would have still been the same at a company level, but you wouldn't have gained anything share price-wise because all of the upside was already built into the share price way back then. Now, that wasn't the case with Amazon, but 160 times earnings for WiseTech at 20 times sales for Afterpay, it's hard not to believe that a decent proportion of that upside is already priced in and none of the downside. So right now, if you're buying the shares, you're kind of, I don't know where the potential for really good long-term growth is, market-beating growth is from here. And that's my basic concern. I think if you're expecting all the good stuff and none of the bad stuff, there's every chance that, as I said, prices are crazy, silly, choose your adjective. I think we're at that point where we're way all up one end of the risk spectrum, and a lot has to go right for that to happen. Now, I do think of the WAC stocks, one, maybe two, go on to be successful. So I wouldn't say they're all going to go badly, they're all doomed. And I specifically didn't say individual stocks in that tweet. It was the market as a whole. Mm-hmm. We're paying so much for these tech companies. Apple's trading at 15-ish times earnings. Google might be 22, 24. So compare again the FANGs and the WAC stocks. There's more blue sky in the WACs, to be fair, but there's a whole lot more expected in the share prices of these companies compared to the FANG stocks. It's just a very, very tough thing to look at this as a group and say, I think there's lots of upside left. I have a feeling that maybe the gains have already been, most of the gains have probably already been made.
Incredible summary. So, Scott.
See if I'm right or not.
yeah, we're all dying to find out.
I'm hoping a couple of years after you delete this podcast.
I have a feeling a lot of people are going to hope you're wrong.
I don't know. Look, that's what makes a market, right? That's the other thing. I have no claims to being right. I've been wrong before. I'll be wrong again. My job to some degree is to assess the risks and potential returns and make a judgment call on that. And that's where I struggle to see the value.
So you are very generous with your insights. You are prolific on Twitter. So the reason that we know each other is because you are on Your Money every Friday night.
Yes.
As am I. We met in the, I'm going to call it the green room, which is generous. Your Money is a it's a Foxtel channel. It's also free to air on channel 95, I think.
Correct. Well done.
So we can, you can see Scott on Friday nights.
And Gemma.
And me too, if you're so inclined. So many amazing ways that you share your insights with people, but also you can tell them what you think they should buy as opposed to this group. So tell people how to find you.
All right. So just for general insights, I'm on Twitter, TMF Scott P. So the Motley Fool, TMF Scott P on Twitter. If you want to do that, also write, so fool.com.au is our homepage. A whole lot of free content there. I write a roughly weekly, twice weekly email to our members and readers. If you sign up to our free email database, you can get that. That also comes with some marketing material, full disclosure, so be prepared for that. If you've got a decent quid pro quo, a bit of information, a bit of marketing. And then we have some subscription services. So software as a service, we have investment advice as a service, and then people can subscribe to that as well if they so choose. But start at fool.com.au, start at Twitter, and go from there.
And stock picks.
There is that. So that's what we do. So our investment advice is, we have about 8 different investment services. We have some entry-level services to get started, and then depending on your particular needs or desires, we have some income services, we have some high-growth services, we have some kind of balanced, quality-based kind of investment services. So lots of stock picks, lots of ideas there, absolutely.
Scott, thank you so much for your time today.
Pleasure. Thanks, Gemma.
As always, thank you so much for listening to this episode of the podcast. As always, we hope it's been helpful in your journey to creating wealth. We'd love to hear from you, so if you have any feedback or suggestions for future topics, please just email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au. I'm Gemma Dale. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you for listening to Your Wealth with Gemma Dale. To stay up to date, please subscribe to this podcast series or email us at yourwealth@nab.com.au.
Please note that any advice provided in this podcast has been prepared without taking into account your objectives, financial circumstances, or needs. Before acting, you should consider the appropriateness of the information. To find out more, please visit nab.com.au.